animal, talking animal.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest on today's show is artist, photographer, writer, Claire Rosen. Rosen has cultivated a long-lauded career with much of her work reflecting a true passion for animals, animated by a sly, playful sensibility. It's hardly surprising that Rosen cites Beatrix Potter as an early influence on her visual style. It's similarly unsurprising that early in her career, Rosen was included twice in Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30 list, the first time in art and design, the second in art and style. Rosen has just published Birds of a Feather, an elegant, extraordinary photo book offering 120 portraits of birds presented against historically inspired wallpaper backdrops. Accompanying media material with the book suggests, quote, "This interplay of subject and setting invites reflection on themes of beauty, domestication, and the human impulse to collect and classify the natural world," unquote. Rounded out by essays written by Rosen and other notable contributors, Birds of a Feather might sound at first like a coffee table book, but it has much grander ambitions and much grander virtues. We'll explore the philosophy behind some of these striking images and the artist behind this remarkable achievement when I speak with Claire Rosen in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later, I'll speak with Jess Yingst of Rescue Me Tampa, who will fill us in on their big holiday event. That's right, paw-a-day. An adoption extravaganza happening December 13th at the Pet Resource Center on Falkenberg Road in Tampa. This holiday runs from noon to 5 p.m. on the 13th and will include activities ranging from the Pity Parade with the 12 Pits of Christmas to several local animal rescues occupying booths. So the idea of the day seems to be to make it fun and easy to adopt an animal just in time for the holidays, or, of course, holidays. So we'll hear more about that when Jess joins us later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss art, photography, birds, and how those things intersect in Birds of a Feather, the new book by my guest, Claire Rosen. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Claire Rosen to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the book. It's really a striking piece of work, just so distinctive and elegant that I was half tempted to put on white gloves before opening the book itself. So, and I don't even own white gloves, but just felt like that.
Thanks so much.
I didn't want to taint the pages with fingerprints or oils or any of those things. So we'll delve into the book in a moment or two, of course. But first, I'd like to hear some of your story. An artist who specializes in depicting animals in uncommon settings doesn't arrive fully formed. No artist, of course, arrives fully formed, but just that particular combination. I'd like to try tracing some of your path getting there. If you were to look back to your formative years, what would you see as pivotal early experiences in terms of art and or animals that helped shape the Claire Rosen I'm speaking with today?
That's a great question, and I feel so strongly the thread of my artistic roots from my childhood is very clear throughout the work that I'm producing now. Almost so when I look at it, I think I couldn't really be producing other work than I am. As you mentioned in my lovely introduction, I was a big Beatrix Potter fan early on, with all of the charming anthropomorphic animals and characters in the countryside. And what I really admire about her was not only those stories, which have endured such a long time in our imaginations, but also she was a really avid conservationist herself, and she used her work to advocate for the world around her in the Lake District. But I always loved animals from a very young age, not just the anthropomorphic ones. We would frequently go to the zoo, the circus, the Museum of Natural History, where my mom often jokes that I would, you know, cry leaving because I wanted to move in and live with the animals that were there. sort of in all forms.
The ones at the museum?
I was captivated by all of them.
I
was sort of just fascinated on every level as a child. And then,
and what do you think, looking back, what do you think, since it's so crucial to what later happened, what do you think spoke to you about animals when you were a little kid? I mean, kids, of course, tend to like animals, but it sounded like this was more than that for you. Why?
I do think having meaningful interactions with animals at a young age leaves an impression. And I think if you spend real time with them, that, I don't know, there's something so enchanting about their personality, so curious and unique and magical. And I don't know, I think maybe the real world around me felt possibly confusing and disorienting, but I always felt very comfortable being around animals and very drawn to them. I felt, sort of more alive every time I see them. I think most animal lovers can relate to that sentiment.
And did you live with animals of one kind or another as you were growing up?
We certainly had your run of the mill, from dogs and ferrets and rabbits and parakeets and cockatiels. All through my childhood, and horses. And I did ride horses when I was younger as well.
So how did those animals make you feel by comparison to zoo, museum, circus, Beatrix Potter animals?
I felt equally excited to be around them. They felt like my real friends, my real kindred. Spirits,
yeah.
And I always really appreciated their friendship, if I may.
Cool. So to what extent do you think children's books, I mean, Beatrix Potter and beyond, were influential in shaping your sensibilities over time and even as what's reflected these days in your work or recently in your work?
It's a great question. I mean, I have always, I think, been drawn to this sort of magical, surreal world that's full of possibilities and creativity and beauty and challenge and sort of the paradox of that. I really loved the fairy tales and these sort of magical worlds with big adventures and animals that could talk and magical things that could happen. And I think I feel less enthusiastic about the kind of drudgery of ordinary life that can happen if you're not careful.
Yeah, got to keep the drudgery at bay if you can.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Easier said than done sometimes.
For sure. Well, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is artist, photographer, writer Claire Rosen, who's cultivated a long, lauded career, very much reflecting her true passion for animals, as we're discussing now, but animated by a very sly, kind of playful sensibility, which we've also touched on. I'm sure we'll get into more. She's just published a new book, Birds of a Feather, an elegant, extraordinary photo book, offering some 120 portraits of birds presented against sort of, I guess, historic, I'm not sure what the right word is. I mean, it's wallpaper, but I've seen it referred to as other things, but we'll get into that when we talk more about the book. But either way, if you have any kind of questions for Claire, comments about art, birds, photography, or anything related, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So this might be a good time to discuss whimsy.
Yes.
So,
one of my favorite
words. Yeah, well, so much of your work has been deemed whimsical. First, how do you feel about that assessment?
I enjoy that assessment. I think that in sort of play, whimsy, and magic, there's more breath for creativity, the unexpected. And I think for the creative process and thinking differently about things, it's an important space to be in.
And how so? What does it do, that kind of lighter touch, I guess, in a sense you're alluding to? What does that do for either you as the artist creating the work or for the person maybe reacting to the work? How does that affect each side of that equation, maybe?
I do think that it transcends from just the creative and artistic practices. And there have been, I believe, studies done on this that whenever you're trying to arrive at a new or innovative solution, that being in a space that is more playful, that's sort of free from judgment and constraints of what, you know, may seem plausible or more conventional, helps you arrive at new ideas that you may not have come across before. And I think allowing your mind to think more broadly and more creatively about many of the issues we face, both good and bad, is beneficial.
Yeah. So it sounds like to some extent you set out when you can to bring in whimsy to a given piece or project with kind of that interpretation in mind. I mean, you can't really contrive whimsy. It's like having a good sense of humor. Either you sort of do or you don't. You can't get too far by faking it. But if you do have a sense of whimsy and can bring that to your work, I guess that's something you kind of let yourself do and encourage just because of the results it might yield.
Yeah, and I also appreciate that I think that that speaks to multiple generations, that you can communicate that way with children and adults at the same time. And I really have found it more and more fulfilling to share my work with very, very young. And that's been really rewarding for me. And I love to have those conversations with younger people and to share the artwork with them.
Yeah, it's great because so many things that we've loved over the years, books, movies, animation, whatever, if they can be appreciated by a kid and an adult, if not equally, at least, you know, comparatively, yeah, that seems like those are some of the more winning pieces that have been offered to us over the years. Well, let's move on because it seems like as we're talking about whimsy, we'll get to Birds of a Feather in a moment, but I think on the topic of whimsy, it's almost incumbent on us to discuss Fantastical Feasts.
Oh, yes. Love.
So maybe that. You could talk about that collection, how you created at least a few of the feasts, just for people who may not have seen those pieces.
The Fantastical Feast was really the adventure of my life. It followed the start of Birds of a Feather, which I have worked on for several years. But I travel around to different places with animals and set sort of elaborate banquet feasts and tablescapes, and then the animals are invited to come and eat. And I never really know what's going to happen. They're different each time, depending on the animal, but I take a lot of pictures over the course of the feast, and then the best sort of poses and images are composited in Photoshop to make one complete composition that is sort of the duration of the feast. And I work with a brilliant retoucher called Beck at the post office on making them sort of seamlessly perfect. But I've traveled to South Africa for cheetahs and starfish in Norway and honeybees here in the U.S. So really, I have a full range of table settings from tiny dollhouse furniture.
And just so people can maybe picture it better, I mean, how does that work when those animals are, when those cheetahs are coming to that table, ultimately, as you say, a combination of photographs produce the final version. But how does that work? How do you get them there? What happens? What kind of, depending on the kind of animal in question, what kind of safety issues are there? And just how do you actually bring, because it's quite a few different animals. You might even mention a few more of the animals that have been featured in Fantastical Feasts, because it's quite an array.
Yes. Well, luckily, food is a big motivator for most creatures.
Sure.
No, I work closely with the caretakers of the animals. In most cases, there's been very few instances where they've been sort of more wild or free range creatures, but for the most part, they have caretakers, and we sort of speak extensively ahead of time because safety is obviously paramount. Their comfort and safety, and you know, mine secondary. But so we work out what will be the sort of safest, most comfortable way to do it. When will they be the most hungry? What space can we do it? So usually I set up the tables when the animals are not in the space. And then for some of the animals that might be considered more, not dangerous, but more dangerous, I have been in some cases on one side of a fence or in a cage myself to take that extra safety precaution. But I do I do take pains to make sure that it is, you know, not stressful for the animals and comfortable, and that most of the time they're really ecstatic about the food that they get to eat on the table. So I feel like there's always this sort of moment of uncertainty that's really charming, where they come across the table and they're sort of skeptical and looking at it. And
like what's the catch kind of?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, imagine I like just left a ice cream sundae table out in the woods for you.
I'd wonder what the catch is also if I were.
Sure. And there's usually like one brave first one. It's the striking thing to me with this project, with all of these projects, is just sort of the awareness, intelligence, and the individuality of all of these creatures that I have the privilege of working with. So there's always that sort of first brave one that like goes in first, and then everybody else sees that it's okay, and they sort of...
The coast is clear, come on in.
Yeah, and then the just glee in some cases of being able to enjoy the table, which I really get a kick out of.
For sure. Well, we can send people to check out Fantastical Feast by visiting your website, claire-rosen.com, and you can see a lot of those feasts. So we do have a call, it looks like, so let's get someone else involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Claire Rosen.
Yeah, first of all, Duncan, thank you as always for having the best animal-related show in the known universe.
I still hope you're getting those checks.
I do not need those checks, sir. I'm saving them up for your retirement.
Okay.
Yes. So I never heard of Claire, was looking at her photographs online. As a photographer myself, I can tell you that not only is her concept iconic and wonderful, but the photographs are extremely well made. You can tell that she is a professional photographer. The lighting, the color saturation, the composition, this is art. And she had just mentioned seeing the individual personalities and differences among animals that are non-human. And I would say that I wish more people would try and have feasts for animals by not having their yards poisoned, by not cutting down all native flowers, by not using leaf blowers and other internal combustion engines, by recognizing that all of us live in their habitat zone and they're starving. In Pinellas, we've had the driest 11 weeks on record, so they're also dying of thirst. And my whole backyard is like a permaculture edible landscape, but much of it is for the eastern cottontail rabbit, blue jays, cardinals, etc. What really breaks my heart is this year, Silent Spring is here. The birds are gone, the pollinators are gone, and I'm pretty sure it's because of the drought as well as a critical mass of poisons and habitat loss. So I really hope that your incredible photos and your ethic and your ethos will encourage everyone to realize that non-human animals were here first. We've stolen their home from them. We're starving them and making them die of thirst. Maybe we should give them a feast in our backyard by planting the right plants, by putting out judicious amounts of bird food without creating a problem that way. And I just have to, you know, give you all praise and hope that your book wins a Pulitzer or something. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for your call. Claire, response to that? There was a lot in his...
I just commend your efforts so much, and I think it is really valuable for people to understand ways that they can make contributions in their own backyards that would have a big impact on the creatures that we share this planet with. So I definitely commend what you're doing. I think that is so fabulous, and I do hope that message does translate through my work in a way that enables people to do the parts that they can.
And you think, at least indirectly, your work, the photos, do what the caller was talking about in a sense of is foster a greater love, but hopefully that translates to a greater concern and maybe thinking twice about some of the expansion or development or, you know, any myriad of other things that are compromising animals or their habitat?
It is my sincere hope that the work does that. I think that unfortunately, it's so challenging to be a human and not have impact. I think you have to make a big effort to not have impact on the natural world. So, but I think with the more awareness and the more understanding that people have of their actions, it is my hope, but I think that people do want to do the right thing for this world. I think we need to find ways to make it easier for people to have less impact. And I think it's a collective conversation that will require quite a bit of creativity.
For sure. All right. Well, we're ostensibly here to discuss birds of a feather. So I guess we should get into birds of a feather. So first of all, I gather this involved, and you made a reference or two already to this, that it involved quite an extended gestation period. So talk about the kind of earliest beginnings of it, the seedlings, and how it was to try to plant those and get those to, be kind of what I hold in my hand today, which is a substantial piece of work in all senses of the term.
Yes, I've certainly been sitting on it for a while, but the first image I made over about 13 years ago, and I think I mentioned that I had pet parakeets growing up, and I had been doing a little bit more commercial photography, and it's so funny. You watch these sort of fashion-esque pictures, and as I am developing, more and more animals are in the pictures with the people. But I had to find a toucan for an assignment. And so I had gone to a bird store, and I just was so excited about the birds, and I knew I wanted to do something with them. And a couple months went by, and I was doing a different project that had wallpaper involved in it. And there was this wallpaper with birds on it. And I had this sort of connection of, oh, well, maybe I could photograph the birds in front of wallpaper and sort of make my own bird wallpaper, if you will. So I tested out the concept with the little parakeets that I had at home, and just thought it was a really fun idea. And so I approached the pet store that I had gotten my birds from and had asked if I could set up almost like a portrait studio in their lobby. And then I found a wallpaper warehouse that allowed me to go through like heaps and heaps of the retired wallpaper samples that they send to showrooms. So I must have walked out with maybe 200 different patterns, and I had sort of gravitated towards ones that were reproductions from mostly the Victorian era period of time. And so I went with all my patterns and set up, and I just really had the most thrilling day working with all of these beauties. And I think, as I said in the book, it sort of started out as this aesthetic exploration, because I was so drawn to how beautiful they were and matching them with the backgrounds in this aesthetic way. But as I photographed them, just really being struck by their different personalities and just really enjoying working with them, sort of evolved my thinking, coupled with when I released the project, I had quite a bit of lovely press. And then in some of the comments on one article, I was sort of trolled in a not very nice way by animal rights activists that were very angry that I had worked with pet store birds as opposed to rescue birds. Well, they were very angry about the pet industry in general. So that was sort of the complaint, which I didn't appreciate at the time, the challenges that domestic birds face, that, they are so complicated emotionally. And if they're not really in the suitable situation, they can develop a lot of, mental problems. And there is a big problem of them being relinquished and surrendered to shelters and rescues, where they're sort of overrun with these sweet creatures. And so at the time, it was a bit upsetting to have that response to the work. I think, obviously I considered myself an animal lover. And
so would you say this kind of caught you off guard, this point of view?
It definitely wasn't something I had heard before, especially sort of having pets that I loved through my whole childhood. I didn't really have that perspective. And in And it really changed the whole conceptual nature of the project for me, and really the way I thought about animals in general. Like, I think I mentioned my childhood love of going to the circus, for example, like of really enjoying being around animals, but not necessarily really thinking about what was in their very best interest, and sort of shifting the way I thought about what was best for them and what loving animals actually means. And I think in hindsight, it was really a really transformational thing for the way I thought about my work and myself in general. But I started thinking about the wallpapers as these sort of man-made interiors that we bring these animals into because they're so beautiful and they look like they belong, but it's really not where they belong. And I started donating a small amount of my print profits to charities that work with those birds in rescuing them. And I started thinking about my work that it could be sort of both this decorative, beautiful thing to work with, but through my sort of artist statements and conversations and communications with people, it could be a vehicle to have this conversation about the issues that these creatures face. And I feel like that's really informed the way I've thought about all my work moving forward, is how to create something that is captivating and pulls you in with whimsy, with humor, with beauty, and, you know, an artistic experience, but then also share some of the things that I'm thinking about and questioning and wondering how we can do better, and sharing that conversation with viewers.
Well, that's really interesting. And it does sound like very transformational, because it also sounds like when you were first describing your reaction to seeing that kind of point of view, it sounded like it was upsetting, and it would have been very easy to say, well, that's just one point of view and thank you and good day, sir, and not really take it to heart or go back and contemplate the point they were making. But it sounded like you did, and really kind of embraced the point they were making and brought an evolution into your work as a result. So it sounds like truly fundamentally transformational.
Yeah, and I think that we've moved a bit far away from sort of kind conversations around topics that are challenging. So I think that a move back towards that with more sort of understanding and empathy would be helpful.
For sure. Let me let folks know, again, you may have just tuned in recently. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Claire Rosen, an acclaimed photographer and artist who just published Birds of a Feather, a remarkable photo book offering 120 portraits of birds against striking kind of wallpaper backdrops. If you'd like to ask Claire a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And in the meantime, if you have access to any kind of device, if you want to check out some of her work that we're talking about and have talked about, go to claire-rosen.com. And as one of our earlier caller sort of marveled, you'll see some pretty incredible photography and animals all at once. So what else? I mean, it sounds like that point of view from the animal rights contingent and whatever really, as we've noted, altered your thoughts and your perceptions and your way of working. What else have you learned over the years in the course of doing this work, and maybe in particular as you prepared Birds of a Feather?
I think a lot of the challenges that we face today are pretty complicated and nuanced, and I feel like always prepared to learn more and to try to understand the wider sort of scope of the issues that we face and just how interconnected everything is. So I don't know, I feel like hope in many ways, because I see a deep love of animals building and appreciation and people that take wonderful care of the creatures they're entrusted with. And you really see some extraordinary relationships between animals and people, which I really admire. And I think I'm just one very small part of a big conversation. And I think that everybody can use every tool that they have to communicate the way they feel and how they think things can maybe be better.
Yeah, well, as someone who's devoted to capturing and depicting animals. I mean, you can certainly, I think, alter the conversation in one way or another by how you present those or by what the next project might be or any kind of variation thereof.
That I think that people respond to different things. So what may move one person will not necessarily move another. So I think we need all of the ways to share and advocate for more care for these creatures.
For sure. All right, let's take another call. And hi, you're on Talking Animal with Claire Rosen.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. My name is Mike. I'm from Sarasota.
Hi, Mike.
I was just following up on what the previous caller was mentioning. He talked about a silent spring this year. And I have just a question for you. I have become aware that our lovely Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year spraying lakes and streams and springs and like that with herbicides. And their purpose on this is to clear plants out of the way for the pleasure of recreational boaters. But a side effect of this, as you might imagine, is that all these herbicides, they also act as pesticides and actually clear out poisons. And they have devastating effects. Now, this is what I'm told, devastating effects on the reptiles, the amphibians, the snakes, and the mammals and birds that feed upon them or that happen to be in the area. So I was just curious. I just want to ask you a question because I don't know the media this well. I'd like to bring this to the attention of an investigative media journalist. And I was wondering if you have any recommendations on who would be good for this. This will take some work to do because I'll have to plow through some records. But who would be a good in Florida to take a look at this?
Well, there's probably several, but one that comes to mind immediately is Max Chesnas at the Tampa Bay Times. He does a lot of environmental and related reporting, but does some good investigative work as well. So you might try to look up him. I think he's readily accessible. I don't have his email, but I mean, I think you could take 2 seconds and find his email and write him about this exact topic.
Okay, I'll look in that. And it was Chesnas, Chesnas.
NES, I believe. Chesnas, I believe. Max, yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Or maybe he should have a dinner party for Fish and Wildlife and bring some of the animals that are affected.
There you go. And then have you add to your fantastic feast.
What's happening?
Variation of it. Yeah. It's kind of more sort of technical, I guess. Well, not technical, but practical maybe measures about approaching birds of a feather. In the initial stages of working on it, what was your process for determining which birds to include? Obviously, the very beginning was your parakeets. But when you said, hey, I'm going to expand this, like, do you have any sense of how expanded it would become? Or
no, not at all. The project, I thought, would have just been the sort of domestic parrots that I had come across and sort of small songbirds. And I had thought that I had sort of completed the project. I was exhibiting it, and then I was lucky enough to have an exhibit in Dubai where I was able to photograph some falcons and owls. And then that just opened my whole world up to the world of raptors, birds of prey. And it was just incredible, the sort of differences in photographing them versus the domestic parrots. And I just really became enamored with owls. And all of them are intelligent, but just the way owls, I feel like, connect with you and really lock into what you're doing felt so special. And then learning about the issues that they face with, you know, habitat loss and the poisoning of pests and a sort of pest control method and, you know, all of the issues that they struggle with sort of added another chapter for me. And so it was a couple years in between the first start of that when I was sort of reinvigorated with the owl project. So anytime I was traveling or had an opportunity to interact with those creatures, and many of them I worked with sanctuaries, rescues with sort of ambassador birds that were not able to be released into the wild. So all of the birds that I'm working with are very used to and comfortable being around people.
Well, that answers kind of another follow-up question I had, especially relative to our conversation about what got you thinking differently when the animal rights contingent weighed in, is like what the where do the birds of prey come from? But it sounded like they came from sanctuaries or wildlife refuges where they're not going to be released into the wild. So photographing them didn't compromise them at all or get into any of the issues that were raised philosophically previously.
And I have to say, like, you cannot direct birds like people. If they don't want to participate, they don't. And there are definitely times where they're not interested and we don't make the pictures. So it does feel like a real collaboration, which feels very special. And then, again, I thought, okay, we've, you know, sort of finished this chapter on the project. And it was several years later and COVID struck and we couldn't go anywhere. And I photographed all of my neighbors' chickens and ducks. So that was in these sort of outdoor makeshift studios. And they are so funny. So that was a really charming additional part. So then it was like sort of these three volumes, if you will, of work. And I feel like I learned something differently each time and thinking about the things that ducks and chickens face. And so I thought it was time to put the whole thing together and sort of close the book.
Compile it all and wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So the book includes that just breadth of work.
Yeah. All right. Looks like we might have another caller. Let's invite them in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Claire Rosen on WMNF.
Hey, so is it called Birds of a Feather?
Correct.
So my question is, have you contemplated the old cliche, the old farmer's cliche of birds of a feather flock together?
Can you explain a little bit more what you mean?
It's just an old, very old
farmer's
cliche of birds. It goes, birds of a feather flock together. I've been using it lately.
Yeah. So that is where the title came from. And I think my intention behind that was just sort of that we're all not that different. And that across all of these different types of animals, the sort of unifying point is their sort of personality and character and that they are unique, but we're all, you know, we all need the same things.
Right.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for your
call. Thank you very much.
So I'm not sure who's flocking together there exactly, but there may not be birds, but So one of the things is I kind of reviewed it and spent some time with it and came back to it, Claire. I was wondering, in your mind, who is this book for? I mean, how would you characterize your perceived audiences for Birds of a Feather?
I think the audience that I'm sort of most interested in it reaching is maybe those that haven't come to a full appreciation for birds yet and don't necessarily give them much regard. Or hadn't really contemplated that they, you know, might have these complicated interior lives. And because I do feel like I hope that it speaks to bird lovers, but people that love birds probably are already doing all that they can to care for them. So I think that there is a bit of a diverse audience from people that appreciate art and design and interiors, and also those that appreciate birds. But I do hope that it connects with people that maybe don't already have a big appreciation for birds.
Okay, cool. And we got an email that I should share with you just because I think it's a nice reflection on the conversation we're having. This says, great show and so informative. That's Pat and Sebring writing to say that about our conversation here on Talking Animals with Claire Rosen here. We're in the final couple of minutes of that, by the way. And while we're sort of at the audience and kind of who it's for, how would you characterize the book itself? As I mentioned in the intro, calling it a coffee table book just doesn't seem right at all, does not do this thing justice at all. But I'm not sure what the right term or characterization would be.
Well, thank you for that. I worked with Caleb at Luminosity Lab, who's a lovely designer and a creative consultant that I've worked with for a really long time, Beth at Mercury Lab. And a lot of friends had input along the way in hoping and trying to build an object that felt a bit more than a book, but hopefully like a piece of art itself. And so just like the project, which references the past, but hopefully in a way that feels relevant and fresh today, we were looking at that dialogue between past and present for the design as well, from the typography to the color choices to little also inset design surprises throughout the book, that I really hoped to make something that felt really special, that that if we were going to use up all this paper, that it was hopefully going to feel worth it.
For sure. And speaking of that, we should say in our final moment here that it also includes some great essays, not only by Claire herself, but Joel, is it Sartori? Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He does the photo art. Yeah. He's been photographing every species he can for years and years, and it's quite remarkable. So therefore, what he had to say about Claire Rosen, I thought was quite remarkable. And there's also a piece by the curator of at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, kind of placing the work in a historic context, among other things. So there's really a lot to this book, and I'm not suggesting anything that should be done or not done, just because we can't do that. But, if I'm just saying I might get one or more for people for the holidays. And I assume you can only get it probably through your website, right?
Yes.
Okay, so again, that's claire-rosen.com. And again, we're sort of wrapping up here, Claire. I'm sorry to say. It's been so great speaking with you.
Oh, thanks so much. I really enjoyed being here.
Yeah, me too. And again, the book is Birds of a Feather. And add your own joke here if you'd like. Claire, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And good luck with the book. And we'll see what the next project is. I'm already curious to see what the next one is.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. In a moment, I'll speak with Jess Yanks of Rescue Me Tampa with info about their forthcoming Paula Day event, set for December 13th at the Pet Resource Center on Falkenberg Road in Tampa from noon to 5. It's an array of events and activities on tap at the Collective Hope for the Day with lots of adoptions. We'll hear from Jess in a moment on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with part of a piece selected with some of Claire Rosen's birds in mind. Here's Owls from Matt Bronger in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Anyway, Harry Potter. I like them. I like the books. I like the movies. But I think they send the wrong message to our kids. And that's that it's okay to own an owl for a pet. No. Okay? I'm from Oregon. I know. Owls are made of claws, feathers, and hatred. That's it. Like, owls don't give a crap. You ever look at an owl, the rage and hatred in his eyes? Up in a tree, like, who? Who? Who's next to die? It's you, mouse! Owl! And I'm back, hating everything that lives. But the kids want owls. Look, I know a lot of you guys are like, nuts to you, I'm getting an owl. Don't do it, okay? Because a friend of mine was driving once after a storm, and he found a baby owl that fell out of a tree, right? A baby owl. Can you imagine anything cuter than a baby owl? Like, don't hurt your brain. It's impossible, right? Not even a kitten with an eye patch is cuter than a baby owl. And that's cute. A little pirate kitten, right? So my friend, my friend gets this, gets it home, and he calls the Humane Society. He's like, hey, I found a baby owl. How do I raise it? And the guy's like, let it go, dummy. The Humane Society called him a dummy. Like, their name means the Be Nice Society. You know they weren't messing around, you know? But they told him this. They said, an owl that you raise in captivity will never stop trying to attack you. Again, it knows it's you. It knows who you are. Imagine having this animal in your house growing strong off its hatred of you. Just sitting in a cage doing owl prison exercises, getting ready. Like, waiting for that day he makes his Hannibal Lecter-like escape wearing another owl's face. Surprise! I'm not the good owl. Death! Like, you come home, he's taunting you. You've had a hard day at work coming home, and you see this. Hey, how's it going, buddy? Yeah, it's me, your owl. Didn't get that promotion, huh? That sucks. Know what else sucks? I'm gonna kill you when I get out. Oh, you're gonna hide from me? You can never hide. My head goes all the way around. You're dead. All right, stay loose. Prepare for war. Stay loose. Thank you, guys.
All right, that was Matt Bronger in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Owls, taken from an appearance on The Letterman Show. Now it's time to talk with Jess Yankst of Rescue Me Tampa with info about their forthcoming Paula Day event set for December 13th. Let's hear more right now from her by welcoming Jess Yankst to Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us on Talk Animals. First, maybe you could provide a brief overview of Rescue Me Tampa, like its history, mission, and so on.
Yeah, I'm with Rescue Me Tampa Shelter Dogs. We post and help the homeless dogs and cats at the Hillsborough County Animal Services, which is the Pet Resource Center out on Falkenberg Road in Tampa. And what we do is we've been doing this for about 15 years now already. To date, we've saved over 50,000 animals. So we're pretty proud of that. Most of them have been heading to the euthanasia list due to our overpopulation. So just to give you a little bit of an idea, we all work full-time jobs, have families, but this is kind of our passion and where we put our free time into saving these animals.
That's fantastic. All right, well, as an example of the kind of great work that you guys are doing that you just described, let's dive into Paula Day, the third annual one, I believe. So give me the lowdown. We've hit some basics so far, like it's December 13th at the Pet Resource Center on Falkenberg Road. It's from noon to 5, but it appears to be jam-packed with fun activities and rescue groups and more, though fundamentally, of course, it's an adoption event. So can you describe some highlights or some elements that people should be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be out there all day. The event is from 12 to 5. You can adopt that day. You're welcome to sign up to be a foster. We're going to have a pity parade with the 12 Pits of Christmas. We're also going to have...
And can you describe that? Because I mean, people may or may not be picturing that as properly as they should. So can you describe what that actually involves?
Yeah. So instead of the 12 days of Christmas, we're going to have the 12 dogs of Christmas. And they're going to be pit bulls and some mixes that are wonderful pets, have been, you know, temperament tested by us. And they're looking and ready to find their home. So we're going to give them a little bit of a parade and dress them up and hope we can maybe get some of them in homes for Christmas. So that'll be happening. We'll also have all members of our team there. We're also going to be feeding the dogs turkey meatballs. And we're also going to be having stockings and treats and toys for every animal in the shelter. Currently, we're sitting at about 400 animals in our shelter.
Wow.
That's
way too many.
It's way too many. We're extremely overpopulated. So spay and neuter is our big mission. If anybody out here listening needs help with that, is overpopulating in their own home, reach out to us on Facebook, Rescue Me Tampa Shelter Dogs. We will find you help to get your animal spayed or neutered for free. Reach out to us. We will help.
Well, that's fantastic. On a related note, I think there will be several booths at the event that features rescue groups and others as well. Can you touch on that maybe, Jess?
Yes, we're going to have some educational booths out there. We're going to have Chloe's Promise, a rescue in Tampa. We're going to have the Urgent Cats of Tampa Bay, which is our sister page who posts all of the urgent cats at the shelter. St. Francis will be there. McNeely's Farmily Rescue. Our own Pet Resource Center will have some information. The Pet Resource Foundation, Rugaz Rescue, Animal Lovers, and then, of course, we'll have our own Rescue Me Tampa booth. We're also looking to have Lucky Puppy Nails there, and who will give all the adopted shelter dogs nail trims as they walk out the door.
Wow, this sounds super deluxe. So if anybody is maybe driving around, heard part of it, but didn't get all the lowdown or basic details, should they go to the Rescue Me Tampa Facebook page for information, or what's the best source of details for people who want to find out more or plug their, if they missed something while they were driving around?
Yep, hit us up on the Rescue Me Tampa Facebook page. There's also a list there of our Amazon wish list. We're collecting donations that go directly to the shelter dogs and cats. But any questions or anyone who would like more information or wants to offer anything to the event, please reach out to us. We need everyone to help us and everyone to be involved and help us save these animals.
Cool. And let me ask you this, Jess, real quick, in our final moment, probably. What's involved in adopting an animal at the event? I mean, is there paperwork? Is there a fee? Or is that waived? Or, like, how does someone, if they say, yeah, I found a dog at the Paula Day event that Rescue Me Tampa put on, And here's what I did to take that animal home to my house, my family.
Yep, there is some paperwork involved. You need to have some, proof of identity to adopt a dog. Mm-hmm. Most adoption fees are waived or very minimal, $25. And you can take that animal home that day. The animal will be spayed and neutered, have all of its vaccinations, and given a clean bill of health as it walks out that door.
Very cool. One last time, this has been Jess Yanks with Rescue Me Tampa about the Pauliday event December 13th at the Pet Resource Center on Falkenberg Road, and it's from noon to 5. So thanks for filling us in, and thanks for holding what sounded like a fantastic event. Let's hope that many, many of those 400 animals end up with homes that day.
Thank you so much for having us and highlighting these poor animals this holiday season.
For sure. All right. Thanks again. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Myra Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Ball holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And just more great music programming after that here on 885 WNF. Meanwhile, on this show, at the moment, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering something from the Talking Animals Vault. The first person that calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song is Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals, based partly, of course, on our book Birds of a Feather here with Claire Rosen. Talking Animals on WNF.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
All right, if someone can name an animal team, we'll take it off the air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Thanks for listening, and thanks for our nice guests, Claire Rosen and Jess Yanks. Next Monday here on Talking Animals on December 10th, we'll have Dawn Barbone, founder of Samadhi Wildlife Sanctuary located in Ormond Beach. She has nursed back probably hundreds of animals, large and small, back to health and successfully reached them back into their natural habitats. We'll talk all about her work and how you can maybe help. That's next Wednesday here on Talking Animals on WNF. So we'll catch you next Wednesday here with that show. Stay tuned for The Conversation and more here on 88.5 FM.